Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Breakfast with the Gators, part of the Stadium and Gale Network, presented by our partner, Norris & Norris PA. Norris & Norris PA is out of Lake City, Florida, and you can give our guy a call at 386-752-7240 if you need any assistance in business law matters, real estate, wills, or trust and estate planning. Well, welcome back, fellas. Exciting week of Gator athletics. We got college football semifinals starting tomorrow, and big game in Jacksonville Sunday. How you feeling?
Big game in Jacksonville Sunday. Big game.
We're feeling great. Never better. Gators just dominated Mike White once again. Life's good.
Man, tons of technical difficulties tonight. We've waited like an hour to record. I guess we're going to move on.
We've taken all of our production budget and we moved it all into Florida Victorious's NIL fund. That way we could retain Jaden Baugh. And
nice.
You know, we retain Jaden Baugh, but at what cost? Devin's internet.
Yeah, that's price to pay.
That's a fair price. I think Dev can get some better Wi-Fi in Yulee, maybe. But Jaden Baugh is the biggest news. Jake, what's your thoughts on we talked about the optics of keeping someone like Cam and showing the college football world that, you know, when we have good players, our roster is not for sale.
Yeah, I think that's huge. I mean, Baugh is an easily recognizable name across the country, not just for Gator fans. Obviously, Gator fans know him well and his game well, but that's a guy that – Ohio State would like, I mean, name your program across the country. Any of the teams still playing right now would like a guy like Jaden Baugh on their roster. And I think when we talked about John Summerall getting hired, probably the biggest things we were watching were, you know, the coordinators and the staff. And I think by all accounts, most Gator fans are pretty excited about the coordinators he put together. And then the second thing was roster retention. And like, who could he keep, especially some of the talented young players like Dallas Wilson, Vernell Brown, Miles Graham. You keep all those guys and now you have a bell cow and Jaden Baugh coming back, that's going to be one of the best backs in America. It appears to be checking the boxes. Interested to see what he does in the portal, but to this point, it's hard to say anything but checking the boxes.
Yeah, I think we had five players that we really wanted him to retain. Jaden Baugh, VB3, Dallas Wilson, Miles Graham, and then Neil Blackman was actually reporting that Jaden Woods is expected to withdraw his name from the portal. I don't think as of 8:50 p.m. on Wednesday night that we officially have him withdrawn from the portal and saying he's returning, but it seems like he is going to. But if he can go 5 for 5 there, I think that's a massive, massive win for the Florida Gators. I think when you look at who he's brought in the portal, who he's retained, I think the only real loss would be Mekhi Boreau. But other than that, we retained pretty much everybody that I think we really needed to retain. And the schedule is much lighter next year. And so, you know, it's January. I guess when you're listening to this on January 8th morning, Will Norris is predicting that the Florida Gators will make the playoffs next year. And I still have a full offseason of lies to analyze and film to cut up and Aaron Filo stuff to mull over. So
if you're feeling that good right now, think about what you'll be saying in August.
Yeah. I mean, I could feel worse about it tomorrow, but as of, you know, right now we have gotten a flurry of commitments from the portal. I like what I'm seeing. I've got Coach Summerall talking like he's Coach Spurrier on TV shows and radio hits awesome. And whatnot. And so, you know, we're summoning all over the world right now. It's great.
Yeah, I think on your point about Boreau, that's a tough loss. I don't think there's any sugarcoating it. But if that's the biggest player you lose in the portal, it doesn't feel any more normal than this era of college football roster attrition. You know what I mean?
Certainly not. Yeah. Yeah. I think it's just like when you see a guy who was, I guess, what was he, a sophomore? And
he was a good player.
Yeah. Good player. You know, I would say an above replacement level starting nose tackle. And you know, he goes to Ole Miss, who's been cleaning up in the portal and who has obviously got a shot to win the national championship. You know, wasn't like some of these others where they've maybe gone to Mississippi State or USF or Washington State, or things like that. So definitely one I would have liked to have kept. But I think, you know, we've brought in a couple of guys on the D line. I think that they are really high on McLeod and some of the freshmen coming in, and Mbachu and some of the other guys that we have. And I think maybe Brian Taylor has another year. Another year.
I think they had to do something with his JUCO. I think it looks like with the video he posted on Twitter today, that sounds like he got some eligibility left for one more.
He posted the videos that everybody else who has returned posted. And so, you know, in this world of deciphering what college kids are meaning on Twitter, I think that translates to I'm back.
The world of 2026 college football in a nutshell.
Right? Yeah. Right. So I like the way the Gators have. I mean, it was pretty clear from last year that the losses were coaching decisions. The roster was in a really good place. And like, I mean, DJ Lagway threw 5 picks at LSU and we didn't get blown out because of how good the front 7 was. Ole Miss is about to, you know, play Miami for the national champion, for a spot in the national championship. And we lost by 10 with a late touchdown, had a chance to seize the game and win that game because of the front 7. Same thing with the Miami game, had the ball down 6, could have scored a touchdown and really taken that. So I think just the retention of these guys in the front 7 are really good. And I think that the skill position retention has been fantastic. And if we can get a little bit of development out of some of these redshirt juniors that we've got on the offensive line who haven't really played that much, because even under Napier, we were pretty old on the offensive line, which is part of what made it so disappointing all the time. But if Dr. Phil Troutwine can work a little magic and get some development out of those guys, and maybe Buster Faulkner can scheme up some things that sort of fit their blocking styles and their, you know, their body composition and everything, I think that we could be a pretty dangerous team next year.
Yeah, I agree. And get into some of the guys he's brought in. You mentioned TJ Shanahan, Egan Boyer, 2 guys from Penn State have come. I believe there's still one more interior offensive lineman. I think the Georgia Tech center had been rumored to come.
This is Harrison Moore, I think was his name.
Yeah, Harrison Moore. So he didn't make my list on here. But, yes, he is supposedly supposed to be visiting. Got a great relationship with Philo and the Stockton kid, Bailey Stockton, the receiver that committed to us as well from Georgia Tech. So, yeah, losing 3 or 4 seniors up front on the offensive line. And I believe we mentioned Trotline's got 39, like, all-conference selections at his time at Penn State. So, I know those guys aren't super experienced right now. I think Harrison Moore would probably fit that mold the best. But I'm excited who he can bring along. And I know there's a few other guys are going to try to bring up front. But the biggest so far, losing Micah Breaux, we brought in and hopefully retaining Jaden Woods is what it's rumored to be. I know Pete Nakos at On3 said he's leaning towards coming after Summerall and a few other staff members. Brad White went up there and visited him Tuesday at his home in Kansas. Is that Emmanuel O? I'm not even going to try to pronounce his last name. The defensive lineman from Jacksonville State is 6'7", 315. And have you guys seen any film on him? I know he had 5 sacks last year. It's a little smaller level competition, but for a guy that size, the impact he can bring off the edge, him and Jaden Woods coming off from the outside is just – I mean, we got some real ball players and kept our entire linebacking core. Like Will said, this front 7 kept us in a lot of games last year, and retaining most of that talent is – we're going to be in the playoffs again. Playoffs next year.
Devin, you're back in. Have you been able to use any of your Wi-Fi capacity to cut up some film and see any of our portal guys?
Yeah, I've been rubbing some sots together trying to get connected to the outside world. If I look a little disheveled tonight, it's because I've been in a 12-round boxing match with my laptop for the last hour and a half trying to get us going. So I apologize for that. Yeah, I mean, I'm sure y'all touched on it but in the first few minutes, but you can't really complain, I don't think, with how the first, you know, what has it been, 5 days of the portal's gone. It's really refreshing to see a sense of urgency from, you know, the staff. It's something that we haven't had for 4 years. So the way that they're attacking the portal, the way that they're aggressively going after the guys they want to retain on the roster. It seemed like the last staff just wasn't competitive in that way. Like they thought that it was okay for, you know, a Trevor Etienne to go play at your biggest rival. And it seems like that this staff is taking the position that no, it's not okay for Jaden Ball to go play for Texas. No, it's not okay for Jaden Woods. It sounds like it's not okay for Jaden Woods to go play at Texas or Ohio State or somewhere else. We're going to keep those guys.
Or Georgia Dev.
Yeah. Any of these teams that are, you know, national powers right now, it seems like this staff is taking it personal. They're treating this like it's part of the competitive process because it is. And that's refreshing to see. I mean, we're 5 days in, and I think that y'all touched on Mekhi Boyereau. I think he's the only guy, maybe DJ Lagway, depending on how our quarterback play winds up this fall. But I think he's the only guy that you take a second and go, man, I really wish we didn't lose that guy. So been really happy with it so far. Really happy with the guys they've brought in. You got to trust the evaluations. You won't know what those guys are, what kind of contributors they'll be until, you know, August or September. But as far as, you know, 5 days in, I think that it's gone about as good as it could go.
How long is this portal window open?
Till the 16th. So we got...
There's still another...
8 days. Yeah. Okay. Next Friday is when it ends officially.
I would like to see... I mean, looking at a lot of these guys, like the receiver from Georgia Tech, the receiver from Wake Forest, some of those guys. I think there was a running back from Cincinnati too. Some guys that have contributed, but there aren't a lot of guys that are like, okay, we just got... like an all-conference guy from the American or an all-conference guy from the ACC. Hopefully they can sprinkle a few of those in there to offset a loss like Mekhi Boyereau. But like Devin said, I mean, checking all the boxes. And I'm excited about Aaron Filo. I mean, I don't know what to expect from him, but if the coordinator that has a great reputation handpicked him to follow him to Florida, I don't think that's a bad start to your QB room.
Yeah, it's interesting to see what their – kind of process is, because, you know, like I was sort of saying, I feel like the roster is a top 15 roster. And so of course there's, you know, spots that you can upgrade, but like, who are you going to go get that's an upgrade from Dallas Wilson or VB3? Like maybe there was a defensive tackle, like for example, I would have loved to have gotten in on the John Walker sweepstakes. Although he was pretty hurt at UCF his entire I think he spent 2 years there, but you know, he was down to us in UCF and chose to stay home and go to UCF, but now he's going up to Ohio State. So, you know, I trust Ryan Day's program to develop any sort of defensive tackle. We can see the talent that they put into the NFL year after year. But you know, it's almost like nitpicking a little bit just to like see where can we upgrade. Because I really do think Napier did a pretty good job of recruiting high school talent and keeping them here and developing them really into plays. I just don't think that they put them in right, you know, good position to succeed on game day. But as far as like having, you know, stud players, like Summerall said it in his opening press conference, like we've got dudes on both sides of the line of scrimmage and on both sides of the ball. So I don't know, Devin, I've already declared that we're going to make the playoffs next year. So
I think I heard Jackson say that too. A perfect example of that though is, I mean, we said before the season that the Swamp would win you a game, and it will every year, but we dominated Texas.
Yeah.
We were down 13-7 at Miami, who's playing in the Final Four. We lost 24-20 on a neutral field to Georgia. Like, I think it was a one-score game in the fourth quarter in College Station. The same with Ole Miss. There were plenty of examples of us competing with these national championship caliber teams with a moron for a head coach. And I think that, like, you know, that sounds harsh. He was a terrible head football coach. So you have the sample size at Tulane and Troy for how he is on game days. But when it comes to the roster at this point, I mean, I think that you look at it on paper, and on paper, the roster in year one is going to be the best it could possibly be. And I think that that's exciting, knowing that, you know, his success and his track record on the field at Tulane and Troy have been conference championships every year. So it's a good combination to be bringing back these talented players that you wanted to bring back, in addition to hopefully having a massive upgrade in your on-field coaching. That seems like that's a good combination for early success, especially because, and two, it's not the first year. I mean, he's a first-year starter at quarterback, but it's a quarterback that's been in our offense now for 3 years, or going to be his third year. So it's not such a transition as it would be, you know, otherwise.
And it also seems like he's not satisfied, just because I know we have, you know, that West Virginia wide receiver who's been really productive. He's going to visit. There were a couple other ones that were pretty notable, but it's like, you know, what else is Florida going to be able to do at wide receiver? I was just thinking in my head, but at the same time, it seems like Summerall isn't content just to, like, be there. And if there's a better guy out there, then, you know, it is a free market, so let's go get the best guy. And
Vanderbilt receiver into the portal. I think he's visiting Texas in the next day or two. Then I think the Gators are trying to get him on campus either the weekend or the beginning of next week. So,
yeah. And to your point about cutting up film, I haven't had a chance to do that with my day job and everything. But you can pretty much look. And, you know, if Texas, Texas A&M, Texas Tech, LSU, and Miami are involved, and then Georgia, and then I guess Ohio State, you know, if those programs are involved with the guys that Florida is going after, which to a certain extent they have been, I think that's a pretty good sign. You know, not all these portal guys are going to work out, but, you know, it's kind of the same with recruiting high school kids. Like, you got to be in there, win those battles, and if they don't work out, so be it. But you got to make sure that the other guys don't get them.
Yeah, and I think Dev made a good point in our chat today that the lack of Tulane players coming. I think the only two that have signed so far, the specialist, the kicker, and the punter that were on campus this past weekend. Obviously, there's one, about three that we said we would take, the defensive lineman, the linebacker, and the receiver. I don't know the status of two of the three of those guys. I think Hopper went to Colorado. So I wish he could have made a trip to Gainesville, but Summerall's done a great job of, you know, looking outside at other talent than the guys he's had the opportunity to coach the last year or two. And we got plenty more visits, it sounds like, lined up over the next 8 days, and keep upgrading this roster.
Have you heard if that Harvey Dyson from Tulane's visited anywhere yet?
So that's one of the guys I don't know. I think – is he the one that went to Houston?
Started at Texas Tech and then transferred to Tulane, had 8 sacks last year.
I think there's one guy that followed Willie Fritz, and I don't know.
I'm looking at his On3 profile, and it says he interviewed and hasn't visited anywhere since.
Interesting. There might have been another defensive lineman that we're kind of maybe fringe on that followed Fritz to Houston. But, yeah, that's another guy to keep an eye on. I think he's at 6'3", 250, so he's kind of that edge.
Yeah, he might be a backup to a Jaden Woods maybe if Jaden Woods were to go back on his decision to return to Florida. What a crazy state of affairs.
I know.
Have we asked yet?
Sorry,
I was just going to ask, while we're talking about Jaden Woods potentially jumping back in, does that count towards the portal rankings?
Do we know that technically?
That's terrible.
I don't really know how they come up with their portal rankings. I was trying to see what our class was ranked. And I think
we're like 43rd.
Well, I think 24/7 had us like 15th earlier. And then On3 had us like 27th, because it looks like On3 accounts for your transfers out and your transfers in, and 24/7 only accounts for your transfers in. So,
I don't know how that it's there is no right way to rank these.
I mean, I could have sworn we were also ranked like 12th at one point today, and then we just kept getting guys and kept dropping, but.
Crazy. It moves so fast. Like yesterday, I went, logged into work at 9 o'clock, by 11:30, we had like four new starters, a kicker, a punter, like an offensive lineman. And then we had, that was eight more commits that day before the end of the day. It was like it's fast and furious. You find out guys are visiting and then all of a sudden they're committed, signed and recruited.
By the time you had logged in and seen that, I had already tweeted that we were not being nearly aggressive enough in the portal and we were clearly broke. And, then I walked into a meeting and I walked out. My mentions were just a disaster from a bunch of burner accounts telling me that I should shut up and everything. It was nice because I haven't really gotten it since the season. And so, you know, sometimes it's nice to make sure you still have your fastball. You can get the TL riled up a little bit.
Hey, that's just the circle of life. You hold them accountable and then they hold you accountable.
It is. And you know what? I was the first one to say that I was wrong.
That's brave of you. And you should pat yourself on the back for that.
It'll probably happen. You know, I've been so hard on Boogie Fland recently. He is probably going to like go on this incredible run where he turns into like a all SEC tournament, like all NCAA tournament team type player. And I'm just going to be sitting there like, well,
you can't enjoy any of his success. Will.
I hope you know. That's not true. That's not true. He had a great drive. He had a great drive and kick. And I was like, wow, that was beautiful. I wish he would do a lot more of that. And a lot less foul baiting and a lot less bricked jump shots and a lot less dumb fouls in the first half where he has to sit on the bench the whole, you know, first half.
There was a couple of the our bigs are so good at sealing off lanes, like on drives to the basket with the guards.
I thought that was our best seal outs were last night.
In the second half, the first couple, like when Boogie was like 0-for-7 from the floor still, it was like Todd would – it was right in front of our bench. Todd could have gone out there and, like, yanked him into the lane, and he would have hesitated to do it. And it was like he so reluctantly got to the rim and finished at the rim. And it happened – he did it two times in a row where it was like, take the lane. It's there. They're sealing for you. They're giving it to you. It's wide open. So hopefully they see that and it becomes a thing that's a little bit more natural to them because it looks like they're so reluctant to trust that seals there. And it was something that the guards last year were just so good at. And it's not fair to keep pointing back to last year's guards to these guys, but it's there. You see the bigs make those winning plays, and it's just you got to have the guards trust what they're looking at and attack it and not hesitate like they have been.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Boogie made a couple layups, and then he was flexing on there, and I did not like that at all. No taunting and no having fun when you can't hit a jump shot.
Gotta have some accountability.
Strictly business. No dunking. I want you, Mr. Fundamentals, lay the ball into the hoop, run back on defense. No smiling, no nothing. Make some jump shots and then we can have fun.
Todd,
well, on a separate note, it was a good quad one win, Will.
It was. You don't often get to beat Mike White in a quad one game when he's playing on the road, but we'll see if it holds up. But it was a nice quad one win.
And it is pretty astounding to say you beat a Mike White team by held them 23 points lower than their season average, and they still scored 77 points. It's something we never would have uttered during his time in Gainesville.
I've watched no Mike White basketball this year, and I've watched a lot of Mike White basketball in my life. And so when the broadcast came on and they kept talking about how high scoring the offense was, I was like, there's just no way.
Yeah.
They're super high scoring and they're the 15th worst team in the conference shooting threes. We're the only team that's worse than them. And that showed through too. Like the Mike White team still can't shoot.
No, they did have a nice win over Auburn where they knocked down some shots and won that game in overtime. So.
It does say a lot about where Todd has the program. Obviously, you raised a banner last year, so we kind of know where the program's at. But that kind of felt like an excruciating 15-point win against a ranked opponent in conference play. Like there were times where it was like pulling teeth with the guards especially. And it just makes you think that if we could – if they don't even have to be great. They don't have to be above average. If they could just be average guards, like – between Boogie and Xavier give us 2 to 3 threes a game and not turn the ball over. It's just that's really all that we can ask for from them. And I think our front court's good enough to carry us into the second weekend. Like, we out rebounded them. I want to say it was by 21 at some point, unless
it was 21 late in the game.
Yeah. So it's
without one of their key bigs too, to be
true. But we were out rebounding them by 10 in the first half. So it wasn't something that, you know, it was obvious from the jump that they couldn't match up with us. They couldn't. They had Blue Kane trying to guard Tommy on the, like, they couldn't match up with us with our size. So if you can just get these guards to not go, you know, 3 for 25 from three, it's just you see the vision. It's right there. And, you know, we got 16 conference games to play to the strengths and to that style that it looks like we, you know, it's a smaller margin for error than last year, but there's a margin in which Florida can play that makes them have a deep run into the tournament.
Yeah. We miss Denzel Aberdeen, 'cause he was so good at the driving and sealing, you know, finishing off the seals, just like Will Absolutely. Richard, Elijah, and Walter were. But speaking of which, Kentucky, breaking news, Kentucky is now 0-2 in SEC play. They fall at home in the once vaunted Rupp Arena to the vicious Missouri Tigers, who are now 2-0 in SEC play. So Kentucky goes down. That's a shame.
And in Rupp Arena as well.
You're telling me that Denzel Aberdeen sacrificed a banner night and senior night at the University of Florida to go play for an 0-2 in the SEC Kentucky team?
Oh, yeah. And his coach, Mark Pope, is having just the biggest meltdowns of all time at every single press conference. He just walks in and he's like, we're looking for answers. He is trying to, like, teach a basketball lesson whenever the question is just like, coach, how do we, you know, knock down a couple shots tonight? And he's reeling. I'm loving it. I can't stand Kentucky. This is just a dream come true to see Kentucky basketball absolutely stinking up the joint.
That's always a good sign. That reminds me of, like, the Muschamp days when it was like the end times for him. And it was like, do you even know what a midline is? Like, you got Mark Pope, like, explaining the intricacies of ghost screens and basketball to some dude from Lexington.
Dude, it's even worse than that. He's like revealing it seems like every single time he loses, Rick Pitino calls him to coach him up. And he just tells the world that Rick Pitino called him and told him that he wasn't coaching him hard enough. And he just volunteers the information for whatever reason. And I don't know. Everybody says he's such a great guy. So maybe he's just like too good of a guy that he, you know, just can't keep anything to himself. But Seeing them be a dumpster fire, seeing the Kentucky radio, sports radio guys just constantly talking about how bad it is, it's so funny. I have had a total change of heart on John Calipari just because he left Kentucky and now is like slightly better than Arkansas was. They're not even like great elite, right? And it just to see the Cats fans in turmoil is beautiful.
All of our losses, you hate saying this about a 5-loss team, but they seem to have not aged poorly at this point.
Early best 5-loss team in the country.
Best 5-loss team in the country. Somebody's got to be that.
We do have Connecticut in overtime right now on the road at Providence.
TCU beating Kansas last night would have been nice for the old resume. Yes.
The metrics would have liked that one.
They blew an 11-point lead with 2.5 minutes left. Ironically, right after Will texted everybody to check out TCU. So that was brutal.
Sorry to Coach Dixon and the boys out there that, you know, I those free throws did not go in for a reason, and you just had no idea that it was because of some goober sitting in Tampa, Florida, texting his friends.
So you guys out in Dallas, Fort Worth, you know who to win now.
Yeah.
That's it.
Things, just looking ahead in the basketball schedule, things could kind of open up for us a little bit. I mean, you like your chances at home against Tennessee. They're good, but you know how Rick Barnes teams are, especially with Golden in the Swamp in Gainesville. It's been, you know, we've handled better Tennessee teams in Gainesville under Todd. Road game at Oklahoma, it's always hard to play on the road, but that should be a game, I think, that that's winnable for Florida. And then obviously you go to Vanderbilt, which is kind of a shockingly a litmus test this year. But then it's LSU at home, a bad Auburn team at home. South Carolina is a, you know, average to below average team in the conference. I mean, you can go on a little bit of run, bank some wins here in January, and kind of start rolling into the months where you make your money.
Yeah, yeah, you go. You enter. You win four of the next five. Enter February at 5-2. You got a bunch of big home games in Alabama, Kentucky, Arkansas, all in Gainesville. It suits up pretty well for the Gators to go 13-5. I think we went 14-4 last year in league play, so it's not out of the possibilities for us to. You know, I don't think we're not gonna win the SEC. I don't imagine in league play, but at least to finish.
Oh, I'm not gonna do that yet.
I was going to ask, like, what 15 games in is not a small sample size in a college basketball season. What are expectations I guess, conference play now?
We kind of just talked about it with Neil. I mean, yeah, you know, Neil did say that the thing that concerned him about the Missouri game was going on the road there where they had just lost by 40 and they actually matched up pretty well with our front court. But you know, Alabama and Vanderbilt are playing right now. He doesn't think their front courts match up with ours. And that's the thing, is like, it's literally like Devin said, like if you can get like four combined threes from Xavier Lee and Boogie Fland, and Urban knocks down his typical two or three, and like Thomas Houck is going to make three a game, then who's beating that team? You know, every single loss, we've been one made three from the guards away from winning the game. And so,
yeah, the only game I can think of where we like hit some big shots down the stretch, like tough mm-hmm. shots, jump shots, three pointers, was Duke, and they just had the last one, right? Yeah. So
my take is, you know how they always have like the by this date in the college basketball season, every national champion of the last like 25 years has had this criteria. I think this is the year that it really could be broken, just because the Gators clearly have the potential if they can make like three or four threes a game from
just
what was that?
I just think candidly the shot making lowers the ceiling quite a bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The floor's still really high because there's still so much talent.
I do think this is the Gators' league to take if Boogie Fland returns to pre-injury Arkansas Boogie Fland, which I believe he can. He averaged like 15.5 points a game, 6 assists, and a steal and a half pre-injury before he had his hand surgery, before he was out a lot of the summer with a hernia surgery. So he's still gelling with our team and our front court. And you saw that in the second half of Georgia. I think in the 18 games pre-injury, 13 of those he made multiple triples. He shot 32 of 64 from deep in those 13 games. So he's got the ability. You know, he doesn't lack confidence. It's just he's got to see one or two go in, and maybe it's a different story or how we talk about, maybe not lead in the package of the guard play, but at least from our starting point guard, just a little bit of improvement. I mean, if we just shoot 30% from deep instead of the 26 we're shooting right now, it's going to make a world of a difference in how deep we go in March.
Yeah, but I also do agree with Levy that when you don't have guards that can really create their own shot, you know, like we barely were able to do it. Even though college basketball was historically good last year, we needed some miraculous things from Will Richard and Walter Clayton in order to even get past UConn.
Yeah,
Not even an example from like the NCAA tournament, like those comebacks and those stretches, those runs were pretty notable. But like, I remember the Arkansas game last year, like every time Arkansas made a run at home, the crowd got into it. It felt like there's a three or we go on like a quick, like 6-0 run or something to get it back to 10.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I just don't know that this team, like Missouri was a good example the other night. I think we were down 10 and like every time we got it to four, or every time we got it to three, it was like they made a basket or two. They just don't have that same spurt ability that I think, I don't know, like maybe that's a 10-win team in conference play or an 11-win team in conference play, because they're still a tough matchup, you know?
Yeah. It'll be interesting. It's just tough to have that right after such a historic national championship winning season, because it's like the come down effect. But it could be very fun to see the team grow. And if, like, by, you know, come February, March, if they're really firing on all cylinders, like, we're all trying to grasp that first 7 minutes of the Arizona game where I was convinced that we might. We might go 40 now. This is crazy.
Well, I thought the biggest bright spot, obviously Micah's returning to form that we saw at the end of last year with him coming back and burning his red shirt. But the biggest surprise was Zay Brown, 13 minutes. I think he was plus 11. He had 3 offensive rebounds. I think he finished with like 8 points, 6 boards. Finding that 8 spot and at being comfortable at home. I know we got one more in the O-Dome before we go on the road for a week. But what'd you guys see out of Zay Brown and the intensity he brings, the athleticism he really brings? You know, Xavier Lee's a little bit smaller, so having a guard go up there and get rebounds like Martin did and Richard did for us last year, I think, has allowed us to get in transition a little bit in that second half as well.
Sam, what do you think?
What's up, Sam?
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on. Appreciate it. I know we're Florida Gator podcast, but for those who don't know, the Tampa Bay Lightning are on an 8-game win streak. Just won a thriller the other night against the Colorado Avalanche. But, yeah, anyways, the Gator Hoops, thanks for having me on, boys. Don't want to be too redundant. I'm sure you guys have discussed a lot. But Isaiah Brown, yeah, like you said, Raymer, we need that 8th spot. And with his athleticism, can kind of stretch a little bit more outside. So I think he's going to be a good addition, and hopefully it can stick. And just to kind of touch on it, I don't know if you guys have or not, but my one thing on the Georgia game, I want that one man who touched Chin to be arrested. I don't know if I'm sure you guys have already established it. I want prison time. That was disgusting. And there are children watching, and we can't stand for that. And one other thing, Chin insanely improved. He, I would probably say, could be maybe our second most important player. And
yeah, he's been so good.
His development in the offensive game. Like, I feel like last year, which is crazy because, like, obviously we won the national championship, but, like, how many times did he just have, like, back-to-basket, little bunny hook, and he missed it? And now he's making those, and we're still not quite seeing the whole team's success. But those are my points on that game. I'll add Will, since you put me on the spot there. What did you see from Zay Brown?
Well, let me add one thing real quick, Sam, talking about the importance of Chin. I was texting Neil Blackman today and talking a little bit Boogie Flan and how impressed we were with him last night in the final 20. But Boogie's 10th in the SEC in defensive box plus minus, second on the Gators, first for the Gators, and first in the conference is Ruben Chinleyu. So big improvements out of our starting center.
Yeah, Lovey, what you were about to say something.
First on Chin, I think a big point on Chin too is he's not getting in foul trouble. Like, I feel like he's just defending without fouling, and he's just a mountain of a dude that's tough to move in the paint. So he doesn't need to foul to be a good defender. And I feel like he just hasn't gotten in trouble situations where he's off the floor like last year.
I think last year he was having to play a lot more, though, without Micah. I think they're doing a real good job of rotating them as well and keeping them fresh and only playing 23 to 25 minutes apiece, or in, you know, the 20 to 25 minute frame. So not stringing 30-minute nights certainly has helped as well in that category.
For sure. And then you were talking about Zay Brown, and Chris Harry wrote an article on C.J. Ingram preseason. They're really impressed with C.J. Ingram. And, I mean, Chris does a great job. He's at practice all the time. And he's basically talking about, like, C.J.'s role on this team, if he carved out a role, would be, like, defend like crazy, run the floor, and, like, attack the glass. And I feel like the last couple games, that's what you've seen from Zay Brown. Like, we don't need the 8th guy to lead us in scoring. But Zay has, like, some noticeable bounce to him attacking the rim. He's got great length, so he can help crash the glass. And obviously has the athleticism to run the floor. And so I think he's kind of fit that role. As long as he can kind of feel confident on defense, knowing where – you know, being where he's supposed to be or in the offense, he certainly has the athleticism to play.
Yeah. I wonder if he could potentially develop into maybe the shot maker that we're looking for, because it seems like now he gets a lot of catch and shoot, but, you know, maybe it's like because he's got the cornrows and the headband, like like my boy AI, but he just seems like he could drop a nasty step back and drain one in somebody's face. So
he tried last night. He tried his hardest across some guy and hit a step back.
Like I said, he could develop into one, but he's not there yet.
He made the guy fall, right? Didn't the guy fall and just missed a shot or got blocked or something?
He did. And to be fair, you know, Xavian has had some crazy nasty step backs, and I think he's airballed like two out of the three. So the fact that Zay caught rim and at least we got a chance to go, you know, we got to go attack the offensive glass with one less guy to worry about because he was on the ground. That's a positive. So maybe that played into his plus minus.
Yeah. I'd like to get into Boogie Flynn a little bit. I know Jackson talked about it with texting with Neil today. I thought there was a noticeable difference in his aggressiveness in the second half. And maybe it's because we don't have a ton of confidence shooting. We don't want to like run a lot and play a game with a ton of possessions. But he's so fast, man. Like when you get a rebound, like he just strikes you as a player that could be so good in transition. And the bigs run the floor and they sealed it off a couple times for him to get rolling last night.
Yeah, I thought that was the difference in us. There's a moment there, I think in the first 4 or 5 minutes of that second half, and we go on a little bit of run, and next thing you know, you look up, we're up 17 points. And it's like, well, damn, that happened pretty quick. And, you know, we were running the floor well. We were a lot of dunks last night, especially in transition. And I think that's when we play our best ball. And like you said, Lovey, get him moving down the floor. We haven't seen that. We complained that actually in a few games early in the year that his urgency, especially late in games in some of these tight contests we've had, is him just kind of walk the ball at the court. It's like, man, go push it. That's what you're best at. And getting that confidence back. And who knows if it's there yet. Obviously, we've seen some flashes here and there. We saw that flash in the final 20 minutes against Georgia. It's just all about carrying over into the next game. So Tennessee's a big one, especially how we know Rick Barnes and their teams battle defensively. I know Arkansas put up like 86 points on them in the league opener last week. But yeah, this is a great test before we go on the road at a late game in Norman, and then we go on the road to an awkward court in Vanderbilt.
Yeah, big stretch for the guys, man.
Yeah. I'm looking now at KenPom, and Tennessee is almost just like a worse version of us, where they're 36th in offensive efficiency, 13th in defensive efficiency. Classic Rick Barnes, they like to slow it down.
What are we like, 29th and 10th?
We're 28th in offensive, 8th in defensive. And we're also never mind. I was looking at Michigan State. We are 68th in tempo. But I do think, to your point, the running in transition is huge, especially when we can't really shoot at the guard position. If we can get them out and get them attacking the basket and have those, you know, before the deep, we've played a lot in the half court, it feels like, throughout the season. And obviously that's easier to defend than in transition. And so if we can get out and get some layups and put back dunks, dump offs, that sort of thing, I think that's probably our best offense.
And Todd mentioned that post game as well. He talked about it with Sean Kelly afterwards, listening to driving back to Jacksonville. Like, these dudes can't guard us. Like, most teams in the country cannot guard us when we're moving the basketball down the floor, getting out in transition. I mean, we got Kondo, Hauk, and even Rube can run the court well. And I mean, these are freight trains coming at you. And if you don't convert, you're probably getting a foul or you're cleaning up an easy one under the rim.
It's a fun team to get in transition too. They're fun to watch. Like when Xavier does push it, like when he goes, you're like, oh wow. And you got Hal flanking them. And then, I mean, I know you mentioned Jackson, like we had a lot of dunks. Like I feel like we love throwing up the lob this year. we hit the lob button.
I said last night that looked like, I don't know if you guys could see it on the TV broadcast, but being there in the arena, I know we had some bye games and those guys are having fun, right? You're getting some different dudes that don't get to play a whole lot. So the team's excited. But with the 8 guys we played last night, that was like the first game all year, some real enthusiasm and excitement out of our guys, like enjoying playing basketball. Like you just feel like they've been pressing, you know, a lot of expectations, especially for the guys that returned and the new guys trying to find their mold in this team. Yeah, last night looked like really the first time they actually enjoyed playing basketball together. So
since those 7 minutes against Arizona.
Since those 7 minutes in Arizona, correct. Yes.
Maybe that's what it was, is they kind of blew that lead against Arizona and they've taken this time. I did think that, you know, the Sumpto Surreal punch to Ruben might have woken things up a little, because we did go on a little run after that. We let him back in the game, but I don't know. We've always been the sleeping giant, so hopefully we're awake now.
I was just going to say, I know I wanted him arrested and everything, but like that provided some juice for the boys. So
I'm surprised Rue didn't retaliate. I mean, that takes a lot of mental strength, especially someone so fiery and animated like he is, just not to turn around and bump him or do something like that to escalate things. I thought that just was
too good of a guy.
Too good of a guy.
Also, that review took forever, dude. On the broadcast, they're talking. I know, Jackson, like, you were at the game. On the broadcast, they're like, oh, yeah, it checks all the boxes for a flagrant two. Pretty cut and dry. And, like, they cut to the camera that's, like, under Pat Adams' chin. Like, looking at the monitor. And it's like, what's taking so long?
Pat Adams is like the substitute teacher, the old substitute teacher that came in like middle school, and you thought you were going to have the day off. And then he sits down, he like pulls out his lesson book from like 30 years ago. And you're like, oh no, what am I going through? And he's only about a quarter of the way through the lesson. And then the bell rings and he's just like, well, hold on, I'm almost done here.
There were some instances last night where Todd was in Pat Adams' grill, and one of them was that loose ball that bounced off the Georgia player's head and clearly went out of bounds. We had a review. And there was another, I think it was the Tommy offensive foul where he kind of just extended his arms a little bit on that transition play. And Pat Adams turned around and told Todd, he goes, "You're not a referee." And it's like, and you are? Like,
you're like the worst. Hey, shout out to that video guy.
I was just going to say, he got a work.
Yeah, he got us a couple possessions back. I think, I forget, it is Nolan or something.
Oh, iPad guy. Yeah.
Yeah, they put a graphic up for him and everything on TV. He got a little love from the broadcast. Yeah. He's doing a great job.
Yeah, he is. We give him props every single time. I mean, this kid's like 20 years old. I don't know if he's a student or whatnot, but he feels like he is. And a lot of pressure on him. It's a lot of big moments that he's got to be, you know, he sits courtside and watches the game on an 8-inch screen.
I mean, with great power comes great responsibility. Imagine having the keys to the challenge button in Todd Golden's program.
Could you imagine?
I could never do that, Joe. I'm too much of an emotional fan. And every time the ball goes out, it's obviously Florida basketball. Fantastic. You got to challenge that one, coach.
Out of challenges by the first media timeout.
Welcome back, Dan.
With Todd Golden, I might strategically use them to get him to call challenges whenever the other team is going on a huge run and he's not calling a timeout. And I might start to leave my imprint.
Big brain.
Welcome Devin, back. Are you there?
You guys tell me. I can hear you guys perfectly clear. Yep.
We can see you and your beautiful Jags hat.
He's so back.
I'm glad you noticed. Had to stay focused this week.
Yeah.
Big one.
Yeah, is everyone going to the game Sunday?
No, I'll be there. I will not be there. Regret to inform you guys, but I hope you guys have a great time. I did see something that the Bills are 0-8 in their last road playoff games. So it would just truly, truly be a shame if something were to happen to that.
Thanks for your support.
Can you imagine if they got to 0-9?
Exactly, boys. That's exactly the road I was going down.
Nine straight would be tough, wouldn't it?
I was just going to say, dare I say, 0-9.
Nine. Oh,
perfect timing.
A streak continuing at 9. He's usually getting broken after 9, so his fingers get broken.
All the people are going to be wondering what we're talking about, and it's obviously JJ McCarthy.
We're talking about JJ McCarthy.
The softly benched, maybe starting quarterback for the Minnesota Vikings. We didn't really care about until Sam started coming for our boy Trevor.
Find where I came for Trevor. I never did.
The funny thing about being like an NFL fan is like everyone defends their quarterback so much because they're obviously like vital to the franchise, where it's like Sam probably watches nine and thinks everything we do, but like, you can't say it. That's his quarterback. Yeah, you know what
I mean? I can say it's my quarterback. You can.
Some of you guys were saying that about Trevor Lawrence only a month ago.
Hunter's not here to defend himself.
Yeah,
We
don't need to get down the nine rabbit holes. We'll leave that to the big national media podcast and all that. We'll just stick to, you know, being Florida Gator boys and all that. But hope you guys have a great time and maybe the Jags get a win.
Before we go, Jackson, are you going to the game?
Yeah, I'll be there. Little birthday gift for Emily. So I'm taking her to the Jaguars.
He's going, and I don't know that I like it.
You need
Historically, all right, I'm 1-5 attending Jags games, but you can't tell me every Jags fan that's attended a game has a below 500 record. Like, everyone does.
That's not where I thought it. I thought it was going down some sort of tailgate invitation type road, and this was going to come back at me.
Not everything's about you, Will, but you are.
If you
want to come to the Duval tailgate, you are perfectly welcome.
Okay,
we don't have any chandeliers, but we will have good times and food, and it's welcome to Jaguar fans. So
maybe I gotta see if my ticket connect. My fiance, who constantly is getting me tickets, what a gracious, great young lady she is.
Just mooching. You sound like Mincy.
Question.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't bought the Jags tickets in like 2 years, so she constantly gets them from work, and I just show up and smile and try to crack a joke or two that usually doesn't go over well. So shout out to her. Thank you, Ashley.
The point that I was going to make was, Jackson, if you need some spare Jags gear for the Jaguars playoff game, then just holler. Let somebody know you got plenty of them around you.
Hey, I actually the last Jaguar game I went to, I bought Jaguar gear because I went on a trip to Buffalo. Emily bought it for me. Monday Night Football in Buffalo last year and watched Josh Allen beat the Jags 41-17. So hopefully a much different story, maybe for the home team, a similar result, but a different story for the Jaguars come Sunday afternoon.
I do have a question, and I don't mean this. Are you guys – a little slightly worried of maybe a lot of Bills fans, you know, maybe taking over the stadium at all.
You got to find a new stance.
Bills fans are always going to be there.
That's every NFL stadium.
They're a big fan base. They're going to be 20% of this crowd. It's not
going to be like the Chiefs game this year, where it was, if there's 65,000 people in there, there's 10 to 15,000 of Bills fans, maybe. Is that reasonable?
Yeah. The problem is the,
it'll be the there.
Sidelines, the TV side, so that's all you see. The home sideline, it's not the first Bills fan.
I just riled up Jaguar Devin, his contingents, I fear.
It's also not like, you know, it's not like going on the road in the SEC. Like, you're not going to have 90,000 screaming Gator fans in this historically hostile place. And that's anywhere in the NFL, like, I think Arrowhead is like the loudest stadium, and it was like 68,000, and it's so good that they're tearing it down, you know?
Yeah.
So I think has more to do with like your travel accommodations and that sort of thing, as opposed to like crowd noise.
Yeah. They're not going to be running the silent count if that's what, we're worried about. We'll be fine. No. Hey.
I mean, they're going to be jumping through tables right in your face, Devin. Buckle up.
Waste of a
they can jump through as many tables as they want, but they can't stop the run, and that's a big problem for them.
We have Trevor Lawrence and they don't. We have Liam Cohen and they don't. We're the Jacksonville Jaguars and they're not.
Yeah, we've lost the Breakfast with the Gators crowd by now, I'd imagine.
Yeah. Well, welcome to another episode of Breakfast with the Gators.
There are a couple other big games. We got Ole Miss and the hated Hurricanes.
Yeah,
backyard.
Yep, some Canes fans are already lurking around the premises, and I'm actually going to be hosting one. My girlfriend's father is catching a red eye to come watch the game, staying the night with us, and then taking a flight back. So that's just kind of as much as I don't like the Miami Hurricanes, that's what sport is all about. And they're going to the game. I'm not. Hope they have a great time. But, yeah, it'll be interesting to see if a lot of Canes fans make the trip. I actually just stopped at the store and saw a couple Miami Dolphins jackets. So that was interesting to see out here in Scottsdale, Arizona.
Were they working at the 7-Eleven?
We actually don't have 7-Elevens in Arizona, so no.
All right, boys. Well, breaking news. Jaden Woods officially back.
Wow, let's go.
This is a good time. We got to go clean up some tweets, huh?
Yeah. That's
we fine. Really should have on that Jaguars tangent because we lost everybody before the breaking news.
Yeah.
We can cut that out.
That's phenomenal.
Somebody goes five for five. From the Fab Five coming back is pretty remarkable for some role.
An outstanding job.
What's the source on that, Jackson?
That's everybody on three. Everybody breaking news.
Stock Arrow up tweet.
Yes.
Wow. That is. I mean, I can't believe this is my life. Look at this.
That's a resounding success. That deserves a good tweet of its own by Summerall.
That's such big news. That's such big news. Gators Online posted a free link to the article so that Gators Scope couldn't just copy and paste it and steal it for the world.
There's going to be some notoriously negative Gator fans that are applauding on Twitter tonight. So that's
big.
And can you believe just 48 hours ago we were broke? Not spending money.
it's such a straw man argument. I never said we were broke. I said that we don't have as much money as some of these others. And you know what? Maybe I didn't know what I was talking about. Wouldn't be the first time. That's okay.
We're just going band for band with oil money this entire week. So how about Texas going 0-3? Actually got Woods on campus. Couldn't get ball. Couldn't get Dallas Wilson. Actually host Jaden Woods. Just this past weekend, and John Starnwell was able to bring all three back to Gainesville.
We're the Florida Gators, and they're not. If we want to keep our players, they're not going nowhere.
Always has been.
I also saw that we re-signed Alfonso Allen, who had a decent end of last year. Hopefully, we're not. You know, I won't say that. Hopefully, you know, it's a good depth piece to keep in the room for another year.
Yeah.
Yeah, no walk-on. So he's actually got a scholarship now, moving from the 85 scholarship limit to 105, I believe. So no technically walk-ons, but good for him. We were really impressed with how he played. So
hopefully he's a top 10 player on the defense last year.
Yes, I hope he finds himself a nice role in this new defense under Brad White. So, well, that's a good way to end the show, fellas. Jaden Woods, Florida Gator.
How about that? It's great to be a Florida Gator, even when always the sky happens. Is falling.
Well, we appreciate you guys listening. Make sure you're following us on Twitter, Spotify, Apple, YouTube. Subscribe to us, Breakfast WTG, or what is it? Breakfast. I don't even know our Twitter handle.
At Breakfast WTG.
At Breakfast WTG. You can follow Breakfast WTG and Breakfast with the Gators on YouTube, Spotify, Apple. We appreciate you guys joining again, and we'll see you hopefully next weekend, this upcoming weekend after a win over Tennessee and a Jaguars playoff victory. Go Gators.
Go Gators.
Go Jags. Go Gators.